Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Cast to the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Josh.
And I'm Tom.
And today, we're going to be doing something crazy. We're going to be going back to a game that we are reliving, I guess, for the second time in our branding.
I mean, you are. This was a first for me, but this is quite a spooky game, Josh. It's almost like we should be saving this for October.
Nah.
We got to talk about it. Got to talk about it right now. What is it, Josh?
Today, we are talking about Splatterhouse on the NES.
And not just any old Splatterhouse. You got to see the full thing. It's like Dragon Quest XI S Echoes of an Elusive Age Definitive Edition. What's the full title of this game, Josh?
Splatterhouse Wampaku Graffiti.
A phrase that everyone just naturally says. It just rolls off the tongue, you know?
Do you know what Wampaku means?
I don't know, Josh. Tell me what Wampaku
means. It means naughty.
Oh, so Splatterhouse Naughty Graffiti. Oh.
Correct. Which is funny because there's no graffiti in this game at all. Yeah, but this is a game that I have covered on our YouTube channel under Jaeger's Retro Review, which is a web series you're able to catch, which season 2 going live pretty soon.
Pretty soon.
But Maybe. On that episode, I gave it 4 Purple Jasons out of 5.
Yes, that's the rating system that Roger Ebert used, most notably.
Does it still hold up? You'll find out at the end of this episode. But this is first time playing Wampaku Graffiti, or Splatterhouse, as we're going to probably continue to call it the rest of this episode. So, Tom, tell us about Splatterhouse.
All right, so Wampaku Graffiti. Here's the thing. We gotta be specific up front and just kind of throughout. Because here's what I didn't know. So, you know, when we pick episodes, we throw it on our little, like, app, and then it's up to us to like get a copy or get a ROM if needed. And I was like, Splatterhouse, oh, that's in the Namco Museum collection. Okay, I'll just get around to getting that. And we're getting closer and closer.
That came out in June of last year, right?
Yeah, it did. And I'm getting closer, and I see it on the eShop, and I'm like, all right, $30. I mean, at least I'll have Dig Dug and Pac-Man in there, so I can play some other old, like, you know, classic titles. And then get to Splatterhouse. But then you mentioned that you drop a ROM because you're so kind and nice and beautiful. And I'm playing it, and then I'm starting to realize this doesn't look anything like the packaging for the Namco Museum. And then I start doing some digging. So, Josh, we have to acknowledge the fact that this is not the first Splatterhouse game, and it may not be the Splatterhouse game that most people are expecting or are immediately familiar with, you know? So let's, you want to talk about this in a little segment we call the nitty gritty?
The nitty gritty.
Splatterhouse, it's a 1988 arcade game from Namco. It's got kind of realistic, grittier graphics. You play as a Jason Voorhees-esque man in a spooky mask with holes in it, but it's not.
Named Rick,
but it's not a hockey mask. It's not, it's legally distinct.
It's a skull mask.
It's a skull mask, yeah, okay. And he makes his way through a bunch of levels that are themed around iconic American horror and slasher movies, and he fights enemies that are based around such, and he's trying to save his girlfriend Jenny, I believe. It's
Jennifer.
Jenny, right? Jennifer. Oh, not Jenny, it's Jennifer. Right. So that's Splatterhouse. Splatterhouse Wampaku Graffiti was released on July 31st, 1989 on the Famicom in Japan. And this was the first Splatterhouse game to come to home consoles.
Yep.
But this one was a Japanese exclusive. Only in Japan.
Yes. So what reason being, and I think we can pretty much sum up why it was only in Japan. There's a lot of violence in this game. Way too much violence that we're used to in the NES. There's a lot of religious symbolization. Symbology? Is that the word I want to use?
Symbolism.
Symbolism? Okay.
For. Yeah.
There's some hooded figures in this game that resemble some racist people that are out there.
Yeah. There's imagery. There's a lot of disconnect between cultures, and the imagery just would not have flown in America. Getting back to, you know, just some of the rest of the nitty-gritty, this was developed by Now Productions, And they were a developer who made titles for multiple companies, including Nintendo and Sega and things like that. They were kind of like a freelance, just, you know, like, hey, do you have a side project? We'll develop it for you. They did this for multiple consoles and multiple, like I said, companies up until 2009, and now they mostly make phone apps. Josh, are you aware of any of the big games that now productions had, like, you know, a presence in?
The only other ones that I knew were the Splatterhouse games that came to the Sega Genesis.
Okay. Well, three big ones that I noted were Katamari Damacy, Mario Superstar Baseball, and Sonic Riders, among others. And of course, this was published by Namco. It's arguably one of their, I'd say this is a pretty strong second string franchise from Namco. Would you disagree?
No, I think this is really good. We got a newer version of Splatterhouse that was released in 2010. So about 11 years ago, it came out on PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360.
Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, there were multiple numbered sequels in the Sega Genesis era. There was 2 and 3.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back to what I said at the beginning, the original Splatterhouse had this realistic, you know, horror style to it. And Wampuku Graffiti is the only one that has, honestly, Josh, an adorable art style. Like, this cute,
chibi,
kind of like chibi art style. And then all the ones after that went right back to the horror, the blood, the guts, you know? And I think that's really interesting. So, Josh, when is the first time that you played Splatterhouse Wampuku Graffiti? And how did you, like, find out about this one? How did you come to it?
So,
did you know about the original Splatterhouse? You know, like, tell me.
Let me take you through the history. So it was a couple years ago. Oh, man, I would say probably like 6 or 7 years ago. And I was watching videos on YouTube about great horror games that came out, or, you know, great retro horror games, because that's what I was into, you know, that kind of that era of or style of games. And everyone was talking about Splatterhouse for the Genesis. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I remember hearing about that when I was younger. I wasn't 100% into it. And then they said, and then I got into like banned NES games. And that's where I found Sweet Home. I found Wampaku Graffiti. I found several other games and stuff like that around that era. Devil's World was the other one. That was it. Mm-hmm. And I was so intrigued with it because it was like, okay, is it Friday the 13th? Like, are you like a Jason Voorhees, but like you're a good guy, but you're reliving all of these classic 70s and 80s movies. All these classic horror movies are being replicated inside this game. And there's so many references. And the game is really fun. It's very tight controls. Sometimes it's a little punishing, but it's that NES punishment that you get to it. I saw the art style and I was like, man, I love it. It's so just, it just pops more. And it stands out because, like, you don't think that this is a horror game. But, like, it's so adorable, but at the same time, it's really ugly and it's really disturbing at certain periods of this game. But it was just so fun, you know, when you get to the end of the first level and you have the Thriller dance-off with Michael Jackson and the mummies, like, that's awesome. And that was it. Like, YouTube turned me on to it and I picked it up after that. And I found, because of course it wasn't made in America, so I went to a game store and they actually were making reproduction copies of games that weren't made in America. And that's where I got this NES version of Splatterhouse. So I have this and I have Sweet Home in NES form in my collection now, because that's the only way I was able to actually play them. So yeah, that's I got.
That's incredible.
I love
it. That's really cool. Because when I saw that cart at the top of the episode, I was like, holy crap, he imported a cart. But no, that's really cool. That's really cool.
So how did you hear about it, Tom?
I heard about it through you. You know, I heard about this on Jaeger's Retro Review. Have you heard of it? It's this pretty cool little YouTube show that you can watch if you subscribe to Cast of the Past. But yes, I remember I watched your review and I thought, huh, that looks charming. But I'm not going to lie, I kind of forgot about it until around the time where we decided that this was going to be an episode. And I remember when they announced the Namco Museum last year, like, which came out, you were like, Splatterhouse is on there. And I was like, oh, cool, I'll be able to experience it. And then, you know, we had the kerfuffle that I mentioned at the beginning of the episode of this app. It's not the same Splatterhouse. But today, you know, this was a blind first time jump in. And I want to say, kind of upfront, that this might be one of the best NES games I've ever played, because it doesn't have a lot of the patented NES bullshit that I've talked about on the show hating. The levels don't have time limits. The controls are not ridiculously wonky. It's because it's not a direct port of the first arcade game. It doesn't have arcade game, you know, difficulty scaling and things like that. It seems like this game was designed to be on a console and designed to be played on a console. And it's just so charming and fun. Like, it's spooky because it's living in that homage to horror movies and stuff, but it's fun. Like,
yeah,
I'll get into the gripes that I do have, but
oh yeah, there are some there, of the there, game they are, that's what it's got a 4 out of 5, you know what I mean? It's currently sitting at a 4 out of 5.
Yeah, this game rules, but let's talk about why it rules.
So I want to talk about the one thing that stands out with this game that was unlike a lot of things at that time is, you mentioned it, there's no timer, right? But you gain experience by killing people. So it was a side-scrolling beat-em-up that was an RPG, kind of. That's crazy and unheard of.
Like, when we started, I saw how small the health bar was, and I was kind of like, ugh, is this going to be, like, stupid difficulty, ghosts and goblins? And then as I hacked my way through a bunch of guys, I got, boom, health bar boost. And I was like, whoa, like, thank you, game. And, you know, it was just like, all right.
So what are some of the things that you said stand out that are awesome to you?
Well, I love the character designs. I love the design of Rick, how he's got these big expressive eyes, and how it's just so funny how he's just this, you know, like we said, little chibi guy, but like he leaps through the air with a meat cleaver and can just like boom, like cut mummies up and everything. It's hilarious. The homages really work, whether they're fun or spooky. As you already mentioned, like, I did not know I was getting towards the Thriller dance number, but like when the vampire came up and I realized what the music was, I was just like, this is great. A little further into the game, you get chest bursters from Ridley Scott's Alien, and I was like, this is great. Like, it's that, I love it. What about you? What made you just like smile as you were playing this game? You gave it a 4 out of 5. So why? Like, what?
Yeah. So all the references, right? The way that he is, like, he's not floaty. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that, like, or when you get hit, you're not getting knocked back like you do in those, nope, those tricky NES games. You know, you're not, there's none of that gimmicky stuff that's inside of it. It is just pure, you feel powerful as you're going through. And it is crazy to think about it. Now, there are some parts that are a little annoying and a little time consuming, but you know, we talk about the references. You got the chest bursters. You have the exorcist with the girl with her head spinning and it comes off. Then you got the fly, right? Like, there's so many cool things. I mean, there are references to Friday the 13th in there when you get the camp. And you got haunted houses and then, like, cabins in the woods and all kinds of stuff that's inside this game that is just, it was exactly what I wanted at the right time. And it's a game that I will go back to occasionally and play through, because you can beat it in like an hour if you really just put your mind to it and you know what you need to do.
Yeah, it's a bite-sized game. I'm sure back in the day, this was still kind of in the peak of strong difficulty games where, like, if you paid full price for it, the payoff was mastering it over many sessions. But still, it's so fun. It really is kind of like a popcorn or like a comfort game. It's just like, I want to throw on Wampuku Graffiti and I just want to hack and like, I just want to hack my way through a bunch of enemies and just love every step of the journey. I can say that.
But with all great things, there are some things that we just got to pick apart. And there's certain segments in this game that are so damn annoying and they overstay their welcome way too fast. And that is, let's talk about the chest burster. How many chest bursters are going to pop out of here? Let's talk about the knives that are constantly flying around the room until the time limit's done inside that room. Yeah. Like, there's the
book, there's the library, it's like inside the one haunted house, like it's like an earthquake and the books start falling off the shelves, but they're not just books. They're flying ghost books that are just whack you in the face over and over again. But they, they fly at you in such just indirect patterns that it wasn't as easy to dodge or attack them consistently. So that was annoying.
And they keep coming and coming and coming, and they don't stop. And it's like, do I have to just destroy them?
It's not clear if you have to outlast them. And this is the same problem with the chestbursters. Do I have to just outlive the books, or do I have to do a puzzle in the room to get this to stop? And it's not like we're saying, oh, it's unclear, as in like the game didn't hold my hand and give me a glowing trail to the solution. We just mean like the solution is not clear, and you'll die more times than necessary before you figure it out.
Yeah.
So that sucked.
Yeah. That was probably my biggest gripe. There are like enemies that are flying in the air. They're very difficult to take out. And you notice that when you get towards the end, as you're trying to jump through platforms, and there's like floating hands and eyeballs and ghosts and stuff like that are coming at you, and you can't hit them in the air. But if you go to jump towards them, you know you're going to get hit. And it's like, do you sacrifice the hit for the enemy placement? And it's like, or do you just wait it out? But the frustrations themselves did not outweigh the amount of fun that I was having in that game. And that's why I think I just knocked one point off of it. Right. Because there are those problems, and some of the boss fights were really cool, really well designed. I liked the way that they looked. I liked the way that they moved. There was a creepiness factor, because it was like, that's when the game kind of got scary, is when you got to the boss fights, because you didn't know what to expect. You didn't know their patterns. You didn't understand their movement. They were unpredictable, and some of them were pretty spooky.
Well, that is the thing that sucks, Josh, when we're talking about the trickiness of the enemies and how hard they are to read sometimes, is just that, like, if you get killed in this game, it can be a little unforgiving in that it knocks you way back. Now, it has a very limited continue system from the main menu. I think you get like 3 extra tries to like respawn at the beginning of whatever checkpoint you may or may not have reached. But after that, you have to rely on a password system. This game did not have a battery in its cartridge to allow for save states. So it's just like, you have to make sure you jot those passwords down, which I clearly didn't do a good enough job of, because I was just like, let's go. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a limitation of the time.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You can't knock what they had to work with, right? This, I think, came out a little bit before Zelda. You know what I mean? Like, so
this one came out after, because we're the 35th anniversary of Zelda this year. So that's 1986. And this came out in 1989.
Okay, yeah, never mind. Yeah.
So laziness. Laziness is what it was.
Yes, laziness for a game like this. One thing we didn't talk about when we were talking about just how like powerful you feel, right? The moments in the game where you get the shotgun. Oh my God. Like, you blow up everything in front of you and on the screen, and like, he gets rocked back a little bit, because you notice that the shotgun is more powerful than he is, and like, you only get it a little bit in the game, so like, when you have it, you need to make sure that you don't waste it. But yeah, it's just awesome getting that.
It's hilarious watching his little chibi body just go like, throwing back with every blast. And I agree with you, it's very good pacing for the mechanic. They don't overdo it. They don't, shove it in your face. It's use it for a bit, and then you're back to the meat cleaver.
Right. So one thing, and I'm not sure when you played what ending you got, but there is extra endings to this game.
Mm-hmm. There's two endings on top of the base one that you get. But we haven't really talked about the plot at all. So do you want to like go over what little story there is?
Sure. So the game starts with Jennifer crying at a grave of her boyfriend, Rick. Lightning strikes, and Rick has risen from the grave with the face, the mask of the skeleton on his face. Now, in Splatterhouse lore, the mask is what actually possesses Rick and makes him...
Hang on, because you're spoiling the ending of this game.
No, I'm just telling you about the lore of the mask.
Well... hang on, don't...
But I'm not spoiling anything!
Listener, pretend you didn't hear anything about the mask.
Okay.
Because, Josh, that's the stinger. That's the stinger at the end.
No, it's so good. It's so good. Because, no.
But don't... No lore. There's no lore. Josh is lying. There's no lore. All right, so keep talking about this graveyard.
as she's waking up, she's like, oh my God, Rick's alive. Oh my God. And then, another lightning strikes. And then the Pumpkin King arises. And it's not the Pumpkin King.
We just want to clarify.
It's not the Pumpkin King we're thinking.
if you're from Halloween Town and you're listening to this episode, I just want you to know it's not Jack the Pumpkin King.
Nope.
It's a different one. It's a
completely different. This one, just a giant floating pumpkin.
Yep.
It's practically all he is. And he steals Jennifer. And then you are on the quest to get her back. Typical Mario story, like, minus resurrection.
Yeah. Like, here's the thing. Much more influential and important people have complained for years how the damsel in distress trope got real old real quick. But playing this right after Ghosts and Goblins and several other things, and you just realize that that's how most of these games just start. It's, hey, I'm Guy. This is my girlfriend. Spooky thing comes in, takes girlfriend. Got to get girlfriend.
Like, really? It's just, I mean, if you look at the opening to Splatterhouse and you look at the opening to Ghosts and Goblins, it's the same story.
At least Rick was wearing clothes, whereas Arthur from Ghosts and Goblins is just laying in his boxers in a graveyard like a weirdo. Like, if they didn't bone, what was he doing?
Just airing it out, I guess.
Airing it out. So Rick's on an adventure to save Jennifer, and as we said, he goes through several spooky areas that take him across all kinds of homages to horror movies, slasher movies, and then you get to the final level and you confront the Pumpkin King and you beat him, and then you're reunited with Jennifer, and then Josh, what happens
then?
You're embracing Jennifer.
See, and this is it. This is where the story picks up. This is where the big climax. Cameras flash on, and that's it. You've completed a movie. You rolled on film, right? Mm-hmm. So the entire Splatterhouse was a movie. The whole game.
You see the camera crew, you see everybody, and they're like, good job.
Yeah. You shake hands with the director at the end saying, this is going to be a hit, kid. It's all great. It's all great.
Like, and then what does Rick do?
Rick takes his mask off, which it's funny because he has a haircut that a lot of people nowadays actually have. So it's funny that it's pretty similar. But the camera focuses on the mask.
Well, why? It's just a normal mask, Josh.
But is it? The mask comes alive, starts laughing, and moving stuff around inside
my
the studio.
Gosh.
The mask was possessed the whole time. Yes, we all knew it was because of the lore of the game, because it came out on arcades a couple years prior.
Wait, Josh, why didn't you bring this up earlier in the episode?
Why
did you wait until now
because
to talk about it?
No, so...
But yes, that's the base ending.
Now,
spooky mask.
Throughout the game, if you collected two hidden orbs inside this game, you are treated to two cutscenes. And the first cutscene is them, you know, is Rick and Jennifer being all happy, 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 you know, doing their
thing. Sitting on a hillside, you know, taking in the atmosphere.
Correct.
It's great.
And then it's like, they're happy for now. And then the second one, though, is Jennifer and Rick running to a house.
Yeah, and Rick doesn't look too happy about going to this house. Looks a little like, I don't think we should be going here.
Yeah, and I think the font said something like they're both happy, and then it's like dot, dot, dot.
For a time,
or for now, or something along those lines. Setting up the next game, which is actually the arcade game.
Right? This is, you could have called this Splatterhouse the Wampaku Menace, because this was a prequel to the original Splatterhouse the whole time.
Yeah, that's crazy that it's, I mean, I guess that they're just actors in the movie, and then they get tied up in the, mixed up in this whole fiasco thing now, and then now the real game begins, and this is what you know from the arcade, or for the Sega Genesis, or TurboGrafx-16, or however you want to play it.
Did you play any of the other future Splatterhouse installments? I think you did say you played the Sega one, right?
I did play the second one. I never played the third one. I didn't like the art of the third one, so I was like, I'm not going to like that game. Though I know that they're both really good. I want to pick up, once I get a TurboGrafx-16, I want to play the TurboGrafx-16 version of it, because apparently that's one of the best ways to play this game. So.
Okay. I know that the sequels go into just rated M territory. And I'm not saying this game, but this game doesn't have any kind of upsetting or controversial imagery, but it's done so cheekily, you know, it's got such a cheeky, cute nature to it that I don't really like consider this a rated M game or like an appropriate to call it a mature game. Like, it's significant that Splatterhouse 2, the port of that, either the Genesis or the TurboGrafx one, it was like the first rated M game that showed up on the Wii Virtual Console when that happened in the late 2000s. So Splatterhouse just went right back into being hard R, like, you know, hard RR movies after this. And I gotta say, you know, how do you feel about that? What's your take on the tone shift between Wampaku Graffiti and the rest of the franchise?
I wish it stayed this way. You know, so think about, like, the games like River City Ransom. You know, they were pretty much just side-scrolling beat-em-ups with some RPG elements and stuff like that in there. And they continued that style of gameplay throughout it, all the way up to, what, River City Girls? It still continued that same art style, that same look. And I wish we had a game that was similar to this or was like this, because it was just, it was fun, right? It doesn't need to be dark and brooding and disgusting and ugly and stuff. It can be fun and adorable and just make you laugh. Now, will it sell as well? Probably not, because it's, people want that grittiness. People want the violence. People love violence. They don't care about cute, adorable stuff, which is probably why this didn't stay the course that it was going.
Yeah, I just mean, like, I'm not in any way trying to poo-poo the original Splatterhouse or anything, because I haven't personally experienced it. And I'm sure it's great in its own way. But, you know, I looked at it, and it looks like just other games of its ilk. It looks like we got to make this as edgy as possible to appeal to teenage boys. And because that was like in the 80s and 90s, it was like teenagers have money, get it from their pockets. That I think Wampaku Graffiti stands out because it's adorable, but still kind of spooky. You know, like there's nothing wrong with that. And I think there could have been a place for continuing this, you know, like I think there was room in the gaming hemisphere for this. And I think there could be now, you know, like, don't remake Splatterhouse again or whatever. Give us Wampaku Graffiti.
Yeah.
In, like, update.
Continue this as a story. You know, continue this as a franchise.
Do the Zelda Link's Awakening little, like, clay figure diorama, but Splatterhouse.
That would be adorable and great and wonderful. But with that, I believe, Tom, you would recommend people play this game?
I would. This game is a ton of fun. It, like I said, it's got one of the best personalities I've ever seen. Like, I would hang out with this game. If this game was like, hey, I'm having a spooky seance party, or you want to come over to my house for Halloween, I'd be like, yeah, Wampaku, heck yeah, I want to hang out with you. You know, absolutely. A few inconveniences of the time, but if you're playing on a ROM, you're not really going to have to worry about, like, the password system and things like that. And unlikely you'll get it on the NES unless you import it or, you know, do what Josh did. So, yeah, it's just like, if you can get your hands on it, you're going to have a good time. And it's just, yeah, this is fun. And fun is good.
So
what about you, Josh?
Support your local game stores. That's what I would say. No, it's still great. Still 4 out of 5 for me. It is wonderful. It is fantastic. Yes, there's some errors and some problems, but those are just elements of the time that you just can't fix. You know what I mean? And that's without remaking the game itself. But you could do that if you wanted to. Does this make you more interested in actually going and trying the 2010 version of the game?
No, actually, I don't want to touch another Splatterhouse, to be honest with you. Unless you force me to do it for the show.
Okay.
Knowing that the rest of the Splatterhouse series is just grim, dark, you know, try-hard horror stuff, I'm kind of like, I don't need that.
Yeah.
Like,
all right. But that's good. Let's go. We still get that one off though, right? Now, would you put this higher or lower than Castlevania?
Higher.
You would put this higher than Castlevania? Okay. All right.
No time limits. No wonky character physics. It makes it that much more accessible and playable.
Yeah. I think I would too, just because of those elements as well. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, three of the best games that came out on the NES is Wampaku Graffiti, Sweet Home, and Castlevania. And I mean, that's great. They're all great horror games. They're all, well, one of them came to America. The other ones didn't, but
yeah.
I'm very upset that a lot of people missed out on this gem. And this is, I would consider, a hidden gem for the NES.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. But if you can dig it up, it's worth trying.
Yeah. But until next time, this has been Josh
and Tom.
And we'll see you in the future. While we boot up the Triflex capacitor, please take some time to subscribe to the show and leave us a review wherever you listen. This show is nothing without you, and any support helps.
If you want to connect with us and discuss the past, present, and future of gaming, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook.
We also have a Twitch channel where we play games for the show and for fun, so come chat with us anytime.
Thanks again for listening,
and we'll see you in the future.